Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. It's a bright and sunny and cool day here in New York City, and looks like we're going Italian today. Well, I'll tell you what it was. I went to Staten Island, the outer borough, the forgotten borough of New York City. I'm decided I'm going to be doing some more things on Staten Island to let everybody know what there is to do. And there are things to do, believe me. Well, one of the things I did do was go to this wonderful place called Casa Belvedere. And it's an Italian, I think it's a cultural society. Well, we're going to have Francesco Fada, the executive director, to tell us all about it. And I was there because I was taking a cooking lesson from Carol Gervasi, or Gervasi. I forgot. I have to ask her. Well, she'll be on to tell me. and I'll probably be taking some more. And so that's what we're going to be chatting about today. But, of course, you know how it is regarding sponsor issues. So let's find, here we go. And everybody, yes. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy tale brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. Yeah, you can get these wonderful brownies at www.brownies.com, and I think they got some specials coming up next month is Mother's Day. Yeah, so go to it. Get mom something she'll really like. And if you're a mom and you just want to get it for yourself, hey, treat yourself. Why not? Well, okay, so now, let's see. Do I have Francesco on now?
I'm here.
Yes, how are you?
Hello, man. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Well, I'm sorry I didn't get an opportunity to see the rest of the mansion. However, tell us all about Casa Belvedere.
Yeah, so Casa Belvedere, as you said, it's a very nice mansion. It was built in 1908, it has been acquired 3 years ago by Gina Biancardi, the founder of the Italian Cultural Foundation at Casa Belvedere, to be transformed in a cultural center dedicated to promoting Italian culture with many different activities, and which in cucina, which in Italian means literally in the kitchen, is one of those, the one that you attended a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And besides the culinary activities, we have many programs dedicated to bring Italian culture to New York City and Staten Island in particular. We do many different programs, and starting from cinema, we bring recent Italian movies to Casa Belvedere, and during the summer, with outdoor screenings called Cinema Sotto le Stelle, meaning Cinema Under the Stars. And this year we're going to have 12 movies over the summer every Thursday evening. The best or the most awarded Italian movies in the past 10 years. So we started last year. It was very successful. So we decided to add more movies this summer. And I hope to see many, many different people coming over, even from the other boroughs. And we do, of course, Italian language classes. We do book presentation, lectures, music. We try to expand our outreach to many different items and sectors, with guests coming from Italy, with Italian-American writers, with Italian-American composers. So we try to be at the center of the action, or the cultural action, let's say, in Staten Island. There's no many places where you can go in Staten Island actually to listen or to experience the Italian culture.
Is there a large Italian population in Staten Island?
Yes, there is actually. In fact, it says that 50% of the population in Staten Island has an Italian origin. So out of, let's say, 500,000 people that live there, 250,000 have an Italian origin. So it's a very large community that has not too many places where to go when they look for some cultural programs dedicated to Italy. So that's why Casa Belvedere, the Italian Cultural Foundation, was founded, in order to give a place to be a gathering place for this Italian-American community in Staten Island.
When the Italians came over, I mean, what kind of work was the thing to do when they came into Staten Island? What was there for them to do?
You know, Italians, they did many, many different jobs. The main Italian population that came over to Staten Island was coming from Brooklyn, and they came over to Staten Island because it was a lot more space and a lot more opportunities to build up businesses, new houses, and so on and so forth. But you know, I have to remember that one of the most famous Italians, Meucci, who is the inventor of the telephone, who has been recognized also by the American Congress, was living in Staten Island over a century ago. And Garibaldi, also the Italian hero of the independence of Italy, the unification of Italy, was there with him. And there's also a little house, Garibaldi Meucci house, that reminds us that you know, even in the past, many famous Italians came over to Staten Island. So it's been a long process, and you know, I'm not from Staten Island myself, so maybe I'm missing some of the details. But certainly, the Italian Americans you know, made Staten Island the place where to live, to work, and to stay, and they built a nice, very nice neighborhoods over there.
Oh, I'm glad. I'll certainly find out in the next number of months, since I've barely been to Staten Island and I've lived in New York City my entire life.
We need to give you a tour of the nicest neighborhood over there. There are really nice places. A lot of green, a lot of nice houses. It's a nice place.
Well, I only recently found out that there was a theater. I went, what? I missed a theater? And I finally went, and it's a beautiful St. George Theater. I went, whoa, I better find out what else is on Staten Island.
It is beautiful. It is beautiful, in fact, the St. George Theater. And it's part, it's, you know, we as in, the Italian Cultural Foundation, we really want to try to partner with those institutions in Staten Island to, you know, to build up even more awareness. It doesn't have to be only Italian, but, you know, just to bring some nice entertaining and cultural programs over there.
Well, when you're going to show the Italian movies, and since you're teaching the Italian language? Are all the movies in Italian? Do you purposely not provide English subtitles so that people will learn their Italian?
No, we actually do provide subtitles. It would be too much of a challenge not to have them. But the movies are in the original language. So for people that want to try to understand more, sometimes the subtitles really help them to understand what's going on, what has been said by the actors. But we are planning in the fall also to have some Italian language classes with movies, so there won't be subtitles, and I think after that people can really try to understand Italian, and if they have any problems, of course, instructors, the teachers will be there to help them. But this is another program. The outdoor movies, outdoor screenings are really an entertaining evening. We are going to have some guests introducing the movies, sometimes the directors, sometimes the actors, sometimes some critics or some cinema experts. And so it's just not going to be only the screening, but as well some discussions about Italian cinema today.
Do you find that there's any more, if you want to say, accent on what regions of Italy? Like, do you find more from southern Italy or northern Italy or where?
Traditionally, the traditional Italian immigration in the United States was from the southern regions of Italy, so meaning Sicily, Calabria, Campania, which is the Naples region, the Apulia region. So most of the people were coming from those particular regions. But I think since we celebrated this year, 2011, for 1 year, the 150th anniversary of Italy, we're trying to not to divide, in regions. Of course, we can highlight different aspects of the different areas of Italy, so the different regions of Italy. But what we try to do is really to present Italy as a whole, with the peculiar characteristics of foods or music from the different regions. But it's really Italy that we want to show.
Let me also ask you, since I, and maybe I'll try to do it the next time I come there, tell me what I missed by touring upstairs. What is upstairs?
So, yes, the mansion has three floors, actually four with the basement, but the main floor where you were and where we are having the cooking classes, which, there's a new kitchen in construction at this moment, which would be ready by the end of May, beginning of June. Which will be a state-of-the-art kitchen, which completes the first floor for our culinary activities. So the first floor will stay as it is. Very nice boiserie and woodworks, and so we're not going to touch them. And it will serve as an event space, as an exhibit space. Going to start also a private dining club during the evenings and to use our kitchen. And so it will be really used as an event space. In the second floor, for now, there are the existing and the original layout with the bedrooms of the people that were living there when the house was a private house, as well as on the third floor. So the goal is to open up the second and the third floor to have more space to do our cultural programs, such as exhibits, lectures, even indoor screenings. And maybe on the third floor, we're going to keep some of the rooms to serve as not a bed and breakfast, but some kind of place where our guests, maybe coming from a lecture or coming for an exchange program, can stay and at Casa Belvedere, and so we can solve some of the problems about logistics and about hotel costs that sometimes do not allow us to really bring in some guests from outside the borough.
Are you? So it's just the the mansion itself that you're expanding, or is there more that's going to be on the property as well?
But we don't know yet. There are many. We have a project of expanding outside the mansion, especially for having to have more exhibit space and allocate some collections that many different museums are proposing to us to host. But at the moment, we're focusing really on renovating the mansion. There's a lot of work to do. It's very expensive because it's a landmark building, so everything has to be done according to the code, and we're doing that. So it will take a few more years to complete, and depending on how many sponsors we're going to have, that will help us. But the response of the community is very good so far, so we really hope that we can have more and more help from the community to build up really a state-of-the-art cultural center.
Now, I noticed that there was this absolutely great view.
Yes, absolutely.
What's this section? And you know, it's funny. If you live in Queens, there's no such thing as saying Queens, New York. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You could say Staten Island. You could say, you know, the others, but you never say everyone has their own little town. So what is the section of Staten Island that's in called?
It's called Grinds Hill. It's on a hill, as you saw. There's a very nice view on the Verrazano Bridge in Brooklyn, and on the other side of the Port of New York. So it's called Grinds Hill.
Oh, okay. I was just curious because, like, you know, as I said, living in Queens, all I know is, you know, every section of Queens, and then I don't think about that the fact that the other boroughs do have their own sections, just not called that when it comes to, you know, sending a postcard.
Yes. No, it's called Grinfield, and we are surrounded by many different colleges and universities, the Wagner College, St. John's University, Notre Dame Academy, so we are the center of a very large cultural community, let's say.
So, when are you going to do the Italian, the language classes?
The language classes have already started. It's the best the best way to know about them. It's to go on our website to get the schedules. We are in the spring semester, and we're looking forward also to in the fall when the works in the first floor of the mansion will be done over the summer. We're going to have more programs dedicated to Italian language. As I said, we're going to introduce some different themes like cinema, learning Italian through cinema, learning Italian through fashion, learning Italian through different day-by-day activities, let's say, that people generally do, and in order to be also a little bit more entertaining. And we do have also a program for kids, so for those kids that want to learn Italian, or the parents that want to have them learn Italian, they can come to us as well.
So in other words, I can you can sort of experiment on me, and I can go to Italian 101, so to speak.
Yes, you can. We can certainly arrange that. But we're not doing one to one at the moment. We are now doing trying to create small classes, maybe up to 10 people, so that everybody can get really the most from the instructor and try to learn Italian as fast as possible.
Okay. Well, I'll be back. I'll be back for other things, including cooking classes. By the way, do you know how to cook?
I know how to cook. Yes, I know.
Oh,
how to cook.
That's good. Have you taken lessons from Carol?
I'm learning a lot from Carol. But yes, absolutely. She's
really
very good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got Carol here. Carol, are you there? Carol?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can
hear
you. How you doing?
Hi, Merle. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
I figured I'd pull you in now as you start to talk about the cooking.
Sure. It's a good time.
Yeah, because that'll be great when the new kitchen comes in, and I'll be back.
Yeah.
Get some photos.
Renovation.
Stuff like that. So what got you into cooking,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll go into why you chose to have the cooking classes at Casa Belvedere.
Sure. So I think just growing up in an Italian-American family and being around, you know, my parents who are avid chefs in the kitchen, though not, you know, culinary trained, it's just sort of something that I grew up with. My family also owns a restaurant on Long Island, and as a rite of passage, as you're younger in my family, you work at the restaurant just to, you know, build work ethic, of course, to learn some trade, and then, you know, just something for all of us, you know, to do as a family and build tradition, you know, learn the different foods that, you know, my family makes. And I think that passion, you know, some children, you know, grow with that passion of cooking, and I was one of them. So from a very small age, I really started to gain a learning and understanding and a passion for cooking, and it sort of parlayed into, you know, my older years. And, you know, while I wasn't trained from any professional school, I think sometimes the best training is, you know, just from your nonas and your nonos and just right in the kitchen side by side with, you know, the masters.
Is the restaurant still there?
Yeah. So I believe we're going into our 40th year.
Prince
Umberto. Yeah, I'll
plug.
It's called Prince Umberto's, and it was started by my two uncles. One of my uncles has passed away in, you know, the mid-80s, and now my cousins own and operate it alongside my other uncle. And, you know, it's just a fabulous Italian restaurant and a pizzeria, and they're constantly innovating different things and inventing, you know, new recipes. And we also bottle our own sauce, so we can you can find it on the Internet, and you can actually buy sauce. And they make four different kinds. They make marinara sauce, arrabbiata, vodka sauce, and traditional tomato sauce. And anywhere in the country, they'll ship. So they bottle it themselves. They make it fresh themselves. And, you know, it's starting to catch. And they're actually in a bunch of different, gourmet shops in Long Island as well. And we're also selling it on Staten Island at Royal Crown. So, you know, certainly we're a big entrepreneurial family. From our passion of cooking, and, you know, I think we also have a knack for the business.
Well, give us the website. Might
sure.
as well.
It's www.princeumberto.com.
So Prince, P-R-I-N-C-E?
Yes.
Okay. U-M-B-E-R-T-O-S?
T-O.com.
Okay. So now, and in terms of your cooking, are you... Is it a particular region?
I wouldn't say a particular region, although, you know, my family is from Campania. They're from Naples. So it is southern-style Italian, very simple ingredients, not many ingredients. So if I was to pick a region that probably, you know, my traditional cuisine is from, it would be from, you know, the Campania region. But I like to try all different things. You know, I love to try northern Italian cuisines, you know, some things that are a little bit more rich. More meaty, but for the most part, I'm Southern Italian.
You know, it's funny, of all places, that's where I was. I went to Italy once, and that's where I went. I went, started Naples, to the Amalfi Coast,
mm-hmm.
Sorrento, you know, and it's coincidence that, you know, that's what I wind up going back to in
sure.
terms of in terms with the cooking class.
Sure. I mean, I love the Amalfi Coast. It's beautiful. Everything you know, Italy and that region is just, you know, fantastic. Everything's fresh. You just, you know, feel alive when you go into that region.
Yeah. What I found most interesting food-wise, first of all, we went to a place where they actually where they grow the lemons and make the limoncello. So I never realized that there were different types of lemons.
Yeah.
That there's specific lemons that are sweet. You know, and it's not like it's even sweeter than Meyer lemons.
Right.
That they have here. The other thing is, for the first time, I tasted pizza. What pizza's supposed to taste like?
Yeah, very different.
Oh yeah, I went, oh, I like this pizza. I haven't had pizza.
Yeah, I think there's many different, you know, I think cuisines from Italy that are translated differently in America. You wouldn't find chicken parmigiano if you went to, you know, Italy. You might even, I remember my sisters and I, we went to a restaurant, and my sisters wanted a chicken cutlet, and they looked at us as if we were crazy because it's almost, you know, chicken cutlet is almost seen as like a peasant meal. You know? It's not a, you know, very rich cuisine. So, you know, we kind of turned heads when we asked for chicken cutlets.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So, what got you into cooking at the Casa Belvedere?
Sure. So I know the founder, Gina Biancardi, for a number of years and sort of, you know, supported her through, you know, the opening of Casa Belvedere and, you know, wanted to, you know, lend something to this institution as, you know, Italian culture is near and dear to my heart as well. And as we began talking and I had just started up my business, Delish Dishes. It's almost going on a year. And as we started to talk, we said, well, we know that Casa Belvedere wants to bring culinary programs to the mansion. You know, how do we do that? How do we sort of start the process? And we created this concept of the In Cucina, which is the six-week series of different types of cuisine that I teach. And, you know, just sort of just from one email, it snowballed into, okay, let's create this series. We did some marketing for it and had some students very interested. And now we're going, we're right now in our second series, and we'll have another one following when this one is completed. But so far the response has been, you know, overwhelming for us. And, you know, it's something that I think a lot of people who take the classes, they feel a stress relief. You know, if you like to cook, then doing a class is something that actually can relieve, you know, some stress. And I think having it on Friday nights is sort of a plus to the end of the work week, to come to Casa Belvedere, come to the mansion, have a glass of wine, start to, you know, create a delicious, you know, culinary experience, sit down and enjoy it. So I think for some of the students that come to the mansion and take these classes, it is definitely a stress reliever and an ability to have some social interaction with other students who also enjoy the culinary arts.
Now, are you finding, I mean, at the class that I was at, everybody seemed to have an Italian background, except for myself. is that common, that the people that are coming to the class?
Yeah, I think, you know, just from the people on Staten Island or even, you know, in the outer boroughs, what I call the outer boroughs, which is Queens and Brooklyn, who hear about Casa Belvedere, most of the current, you know, members and the people who come to the mansion, I think, are of that Italian, you know, descent, or, you know, they're married to someone who is from that Italian descent. But, you know, very much we want to get other people who aren't of Italian descent to understand, you know, the culture and learn about these different classes. But, you know, for the most part, I think most of the people who take these classes are of Italian descent.
Do you get any men coming to the class?
You get one or two. I think I have one on board for next week. And I think it's either a husband and wife pair or a boyfriend and girlfriend pair. But, I have one next week. I probably average about three a semester.
Oh,
not
okay.
Not many.
How many classes, Francesco, how many classes have you attended?
Oh, I've been, you know, I'm generally there to give the tour, to welcome everyone at the class. So many of them, I attended many of them. Most of them, actually, in this second series.
So you basically, you just, like, watch as opposed to participate?
Sometimes I also participate. It depends.
Don't let him fool you. He's really good in the kitchen.
Oh, good. As opposed to that he takes out the garbage, right.
Right. No, he definitely, you know, lends his expertise. I whisper him to him sometimes. You know, they don't hear me, but I whisper to him for advice.
Oh.
And I also grew up yes? in a family in which my grandmother, my mother were cooking all the time. So since I was a kid, you don't really learn to cook, but you have a sort of feeling for it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, just so we can get an idea, like this first series, what were the classes that you were teaching? What were the specific classes?
Sure. So, you know, we did homemade ravioli. We did a risotto class where it was a asparagus and mushroom medley. And we did a sauces class, the one that you attended, where we taught puttanesca, carbonara, alfredo, and ragu. And this week coming up, this past week, we did an Easter specials class. So, you know, something we also want to bring to the program is, you know, something that's really traditional to the Italian culture. And for this time of year, the Easter time, one thing that is very traditional in Italian culture is the pizza rustica, which is, you know, translated to really just a meat pie. And it's filled with just delicious meats like soppressata and sausage. And then there's ricotta salata, provolone, all different cheeses. And it's this just, you know, delicious, heavy, but traditional pie that Italians eat during Easter. And so we taught that as well as manigotte. So we made the manigotte crepe from scratch. And that's also, you know, traditional for some families in America to eat manigotte. And next week we'll do the antipasti, which is homemade mozzarella. So we'll take the mozzarella curds and we'll make it homemade, which will be a lot of fun. A lot of people, you know, get a kick out of that class because, you know, mozzarella is something that's not only delicious, but sometimes often people think it's so hard to make. But when they come to the class, they could see just how easy it is. It's just a little bit of time, of patience. And, you know, we just got to be careful of the hot water we use. But people love that class. And we're also going to do rice balls and eggplant caponata. And then we'll finish off the series, our last class, which is Segundi, where we'll take chicken and we'll do it three ways. We'll do it piccata style. We'll do it francese. And there's one other way. I think Sorrentino, I think it is. And then the following semester, we'll do similar classes. And we'll just try to change it up a bit, you know, change the different sauces, do a pizza class where we'll do, you know, homemade pizza, and we'll not only teach how to make the dough, but do deep dish versus, you know, traditional Napolitan style.
By the way, it's very interesting of your pronunciation, because your pronunciations of the food are seem to be the same as mine.
Well, that is
how I learned, and I guess I probably learned it from a friend who has a Sicilian background.
Mm-hmm.
So and probably also in my neighborhood as well. So I learned to say, it's like where people might say manicotti.
Right.
You know, I go, manigot.
Yeah.
You know. Right. And you can't imagine how I laughed when I heard on the first time on TV they said mozzarella. And I said, mozzarella? What is this? Cheese for Passover? I had never heard the pronounced mozzarella.
Right.
But I kept hearing it. And mozzarella.
Right. And then also, you know, forgive me, Francesco, because I also have the Italian American pronunciation sometimes as well.
That's good. That's fine.
That's true Italian.
So just to give us an idea of when you say like the just to kind of like the sauces,
mm-hmm.
kind of describe what the four sauces were.
So the puttanesca sauce was an olive based sauce, so we used all different types of olives, from green olives to Kalamata olives. And we paired that over ziti. And you can, you know, throw in capers with that, or, you know, other sort of salty brines there. And, you know, like Francesco was telling us at the class, their sauce really was created from, you know, just, I don't want to say it, but remember we said puttana.
Yeah.
we have a few laughs at the classes as well. And then we did a carbonara sauce. And the carbonara is egg yolk along with pancetta and some onion. And that's a, you know, very precise sauce because not only do you have to eat it right away, but you have to, you know, mix it in a way so that the eggs do not cook and scramble. So when we made that dish, you know, we were very careful in, you know, the planning and the execution of it. But that's also a dish that some people will put cream in it, but the traditional and the authentic way to make carbonara is not to add cream. It is just the egg yolk along with some parmigiano, reggiano, and the carbonara. And then we did an Alfredo sauce, which I think was the favorite of the night. And the Alfredo is a light green sauce. Everyone liked that, right?
Yeah, well, I can understand. I mean, you know, cream, cheese. I mean, you know, really.
Yeah. So
yeah, just put it on my hips.
That's all. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, with all of these sauces, you can pair them with pretty much any kind of pasta or macaroni. And then also some of these are great to pair with chicken or with fish. And, you know, it's cooking can be very simple. It's just about understanding how the ingredients can work together. But, you know, I love to teach people that and to make people feel more comfortable in the kitchen and not be, you know, so intimidated to really, you know, hone in some skills there. So
That's really great. So, and do you keep it to like, five, six people? Is that the
Well, we
the
like
class?
To, you know, depending on the size of the kitchen, and for this particular kitchen in the mansion, we like to keep it around 8. We max out around 10. So we'll accommodate, you know, 10 students in the class, and we could pretty much, you know, work through it. Our ravioli class, I think we had about 10 people, and we weren't sort of rubbing elbows too bad. But, you know, for this current, you know, series in the kitchen that it is today, we'd like to keep to 10. Hopefully with the renovations and the new kitchen, I'm sure we can, you know, get maybe a couple more people in the classes.
Oh, that'll be great. And that should be done by this way, no one to take another class.
I think Francesco said, you know, we're aiming for the end of May, the beginning of June.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's the plan. That's the plan, yes. The cabinets
okay.
are in been built in Italy, so they're going to be ready at the end of April and then shipped to the United States and then installed.
That's absolutely fabulous. How about when you're making the mozzarella? Are you not starting from the milk? You're starting from the milk curd.
We're starting from the curd, yes.
And
mm-hmm.
and where are you getting the curd from? You're getting from a farm or from?
No, actually, there's this place on Staten Island, and I'll plug him as well. We call him Joey Mutz, and he really is just the master of homemade mozzarella and the curds. And so he has not only a shop you can go there and just buy on a regular basis, but he has a wholesale shop as well. So I'll go to Joey Mutz.
Where is it?
It's on Post Avenue.
Okay. I have to put that down as one of the places I'm going to visit when I'm in Staten Island.
Where is it?
It's
Post Avenue. I think it's in the West Brighton neighborhood.
Well, what's the name of the place?
Joey Mutz. Let me see if I can get it for you.
Okay. I gotta make it. I'm making my list of where I'm, you know, what places I want to visit in Staten Island,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are going to be, you know, like restaurants and food and stuff. I wouldn't even know where to eat or anything like that.
Right.
I'll be calling you. To ask you.
Not a problem. Yeah, and, I mean, you can actually go in there and get a hero or a sandwich and, you know, sit down and eat. So you could certainly do that.
Does he make it from starting from the milk? I'm just curious.
Don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure he does because, I mean, I think he does.
The reason I ask, because I've gone to, there's a place not far from me. The guy makes it like 2-3 times a day, and for years I thought he was making it from the milk curd because
mm-hmm.
I had said to him, "Oh, are you getting it from Polio? You know, there's a lot of places they get it. You know, the Polio, it's the milk curd, and they always say we're making fresh mozzarella, and it's not really fresh mozzarella; it's reconstituted.
Right.
When it boils down to it. So when I was talking to him, the guy said, oh, no, no, no. He says he gets the milk from upstate from a farm.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting that, and he's not only making fresh mozzarella, he's also making the ragout.
Yeah.
And then it's like I was astonished because it was like, oh, really fresh. I mean, you know, because most places, as I said, they're not really, you know, they're reconstituting, which is not bad.
Right.
But it's just, you know, you're not getting it right from the milk. So
mm-hmm.
that's why I was kind of curious about that. So did you find it while we were talking?
Yeah, it's Joe Mutz. So Joe and then Mutz,
yeah.
MOZZ.com.
Okay.
JoeMutz.com.
Okay. Okay, I'll get a hold of that, and I'll also and by the way, the restaurant Prince Umberto's, where is what part of
it's in Franklin Square.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not far at all.
Okay, I'll have to give them a call. I want to go out there and do an article.
Yeah, I mean they would love that. You know, we've been featured on the Food Network show. We've won, you know, best pizza on Long Island a few years in a row. So,
really?
Yeah.
Now I got to test that out.
Absolutely.
By the way, here's something that I had tried. Very interesting. Of a quick way to make a pizza crust.
Okay.
Flour and beer. Did you ever try that?
No, but is that because the yeast is already in the beer? Because you got to.
Yes. Yes, and it doesn't make it rise a lot. So you do wind up with like a thin crust.
Wow.
And there actually, I had gone to a restaurant, I don't remember, I think it was on Long Island, that featured that. And I went, what? You're kidding me. And so I said, all right, I got to try this. So I did that. I combined the flour and the beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did is I threw it in the oven and let that bake so it was like about half done. Then pulled it out, put on whatever I wanted on the top, and threw it back in. And it was like, oh, good. I don't want a sandwich. I want a pizza. I want a thin crust. I don't want a whole thick pizza.
And could you taste the beer in it as well?
No, not at all.
Interesting.
Have fun. Experiment with that and see what happens. I didn't, like, let it sit and rise for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know how much it would.
Right.
But you could experiment just to see. That would be, if we can find an Italian beer, it would even make it better, wouldn't it?
A little Peroni in it, huh?
Yeah.
That's all. You know, maybe we'll do a special St. Patrick's Day feast next year. We'll do pizza and beer.
Oh, that's an idea. Okay, yeah. now, aside from, I mean, do you also cater? Do you also do something other than the cooking classes?
So I do cooking classes, lessons, and parties. I don't do catering. Catering is, you know, you need a team of people in order to execute, a good catering business. And since this is my side job and not really my full-time job, I just, you know, don't have the time to really put catering on, you know, my menu of services. So today what I do is the cooking classes at Casa Belvedere, and I do them at St. Joseph Hill Academy twice a month, which is my alma mater high school on Staten Island. And I also do them in people's houses. So if you wanted to have a cooking party or a cooking class, I'll come to your house, and I'll either have you put on the apron and work alongside me to create the cuisine, or I'll just do it all myself, and you can watch.
Cool.
So that's becoming a popular service, and I enjoy it. You know, I spend 3 hours in someone's kitchen, and I enjoy, you know, watching them eat the food and having smiles on their faces, and I think, you know, that to me is what it's all about.
What do you think, in terms of the classes that you've had, what do you think was the most difficult?
The most difficult?
To learn how to do.
For people, I would say it would be the cavatelli. So last series, we did cavatelli from scratch. And I think technique in some of the pastas that we make is something that needs to, you know, be experienced. And that's what I tell people when we do the ravioli. Because they're fun classes, but some people can get intimidated by, you know, creating the perfect ravioli or creating the perfect roll for the cavatelli. And, You know, what I tell people is, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. You're never going to find or make the pasta the way you see it in the bag packaged, you know, in the supermarkets. You know, creating them from scratch and having your own, you know, shapes is really what makes them authentic and, you know, specific and unique. So don't get, you know, so upset if it doesn't come out perfect. And so I think learning the technique of pasta and not the dough so much as just rolling it out and making the shapes is what, you know, is something that needs to be an experience. You have to do it multiple times to get it right. It's not going to happen the first time. But once you do it a lot, you know, it comes like riding a bike. It's second nature.
So it's kind of like, as I see on TV, I guess, it's placed flour and making like a hole in the middle and putting in an egg?
Yeah, to make the
to
dough,
begin with.
Sure. But then as you, you know, start to roll it out is where it could get tricky.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think the dough is as tough to make as it is, you know, actually, you know, creating the shapes like the cavatelli
right.
shapes. Taking the fork and, you know, rolling it properly on the gnocchi and, you know, making, you know, the different shapes, I think, is something that, you know, the students have a hard time the first couple of tries, but then they get it.
When, I'm curious, when you make gnocchi, do you use mostly potato, half and half, or what would you say, half potato, half flour?
So it's mostly potato, and it's just, you know, using the ricer, you know, putting the potato through the ricer. So if you're going to use about, you know, 2 pounds of potato, you're probably going to use about a cup of flour. So definitely more potato versus the flour. The flour is there just to hold it all together.
Oh, okay.
And the great thing about gnocchi is you can make them sweet or savory. You know, I've done recipes where I make a sweet potato gnocchi, and I pair it with, you know, cinnamon and sugar and some maple syrup, and it's delicious.
Wow. I'll have to think about that one. That sounds really good. Have you ever used potato flour?
I haven't. It's a heavier flour.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking, I was wondering if you could make gnocchis using potato flour.
I never did that.
Okay. I'll experiment for you.
Okay, you let me know.
And you realize if they're totally fresh, they're called New Yorkies.
Is that right?
New York, New Yorkies, New Yorkies. I'm trying to be funny.
I know.
Okay.
No.
Well, I'm, you know, I got to say, I'm certainly looking forward to coming back and doing, you know, it's not as much the learning to cook. I think that in terms of food, in terms of cooking of food, I think, like, I probably do most in terms of Italian food. Oh, and by the way, I cheat. I have a pasta machine in the house.
That's okay.
Although with the pasta machine, you can't make things like, you know, gnocchis or lasagna. It's not that kind of machine. It's mostly, you know, the small kind of stuff, you know.
Right.
Spaghettis and fettuccines and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I have never tried making it fresh. You know, like when you, I got to now put the egg on the flour and
Well, certainly
whatever.
When the new kitchen, you know, is available, I'm sure we'll have those type of classes.
Oh, yeah.
List, so you'll have to come.
Okay. So now, what is the website of Casa Belvedere, or just if you just Google it, and that'd probably be the best thing to do. I'm sorry, Casa Belvedere.
You can definitely Google it.
I had realized I was pronouncing it in English, so
yes.
Hold on.
And or it's casa-belvedere.org.
Oh, okay. It's an org and not a com.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So have I missed anything? Anything you guys want to add?
No, I think we appreciate, you know, you having us on your talk show to get, you know, Casa Belvedere out to your listeners, and hopefully people listening to the show will come out and see us and join one of our programs, whether it be the culinary program or our Italian language classes. And Francesco, if you have anything else to add.
No, absolutely. Thank you very much, Mer, for having us. And really, I hope that people are going to be interested in come and check out Casa Belvedere, what we're doing. And we never stop, so there's always something new. And be sure to check our website regularly to see the updates, or our Facebook page as well.
Okay. Well, I'll have an article out in next week's Giornale Italo-Americano. Is that how you pronounce it?
Giornale Italo-Americano, yes.
Okay, that's not too bad. I'm trying to say it correctly, because otherwise my boss will, you know, say, Merle, come on, at least pronounce that, you know. Okay, well, have a great day today, and a fabulous Easter. This is going to be a very, you realize, this is a very interesting combination this weekend with you have Good Friday, and on the evening of Good Friday is the first night of Passover, and because it's Friday, it's also the Sabbath. So anybody who's got a family who's got mixed, you know, one is Christian and one is Jewish, they're going to have a ball this entire weekend.
It's true. I've been invited to Passover on Saturday, and then, of course, I will celebrate Easter on Sunday. So it's going to be fun.
All right. So, guys, have a great day, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Okay. Ciao.
Thank you, Maren. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Oh, yes. So, I'm going to make sure that I... get out to that restaurant. I'd love to try it. So let's see. I have some time. I wanted to kind of talk about something. Although I have a new home bakery. Well, I mean, it's a machine that bakes bread, but also I think you can. Interesting. You can make cakes. It has all this stuff here. You can make. It has dough settings that you can make rolls and cakes and I don't know pizza, soft pretzels. I think probably you can. You're making the dough. There's a part of it where you just can make dough for certain items, and pencil. Also, you can make jams for this. A company is called. Jojirisho, let me just spell it, Z-O-J-I-R-U-S-H-I, Jojirisho. I haven't had the, I'm looking forward, it makes a 1 pound bread, I've had it for a couple of months, and I want to use it. But what had happened was that when I was buying some items from Red Mill, they all were the bread for a pound and a half, and this only makes a pound. So I have to either do it totally from scratch, which is not bad. I've made bread before, or see if there's a way of my taking the mixes and like cutting it so it's only a 1 pounder. I don't know if anybody's ever made fresh bread, but it's really, really good. So, and I will, I'm going to have them on my radio show. I'll let them, you know, I would rather have them like discuss the whole thing, how it works. It doesn't look complicated. It's just, you know, it's one of those things, my doing it. So that's one of the people I'll have on the show that will be coming up. Another one, I saw this thing on TV, Smart Mouth. You know, I just like, all right, let's just see what this is. Interesting products, you know, they're always having things, you know, for your breath, and I said, kind of thing, I said, all right, let's try something here, and let's see how, what this is all about, because it's all not just, like, because you just had some garlic or whatever, but I think it's for, you have problems with your gums, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to have them come on the show and chat as well in one of my episodes. So, yes. Last night, wow, I went to see The Best Man on Broadway. Okay, now, the thing for anybody who, it's not anything about, you know, marriage, that kind of thing, politics, and it has to do with, there was a political convention in Philadelphia, that's what it centers on. I'm going to get the script, but I don't think there was any mention of, like, what party it was. But it was the nominations, and the thing that, of course, that stands out with this particular play is the cast. You have John Larroquette, Angela Lansbury, Candace Bergen, Eric McCormick. James Earl Jones. I mean, this is really, I mean, just the cast itself. But the cast, you know, you want to see the show. So I was more curious to see, like, okay, what about the play itself, the acting, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the acting was superb. I mean, there's nothing I could say, you know, negative at all about the acting, because all of these stars were just wonderful, you know. The storyline, it's in three acts, and the storyline, it wasn't boring. I mean, you're capturing. Interesting at what they did in terms of the set. It's like the whole theater was kind of set up looking as if you were one of the people at the convention, kind of a thing. And so there were streamers and, you know, and things, and the ushers were wearing, you know, those hats, the typical hats kind of thing. And then they had someone in one of the seats, like the in a box seat, that was like sort of looked like he was doing the broadcast. And then there were periods where you could see things like on a television set. And I guess this was the 60s, I think. I know I was trying to get. Like, who were they mentioning any names? But I think this was back at that time, because they didn't make it a period thing, you know, kind of thing, like to make it like in this year or anything. I mean, the timing was excellent. It was very funny. That was another thing. So there was a great deal of the only thing that it missed was music. I love a musical. What can I tell you? But other than that, this is one I would absolutely highly recommend. I see it as you must see. I don't know how long it's going to run, but it's kind of a you must see. I mean, just for these wonderful actors themselves, and just you can't just help but applaud them, you know, as each and everyone are coming. Oh yes, and then it was McKeon, right, which is it Michael, I think, the one that The one that was on Laverne and Shirley. That guy. Yeah. That's right. I forgot that he's in it too. I mean, it's just, you know, yeah. There are people there that, you know, that aren't. It's familiar there, but those are the ones that absolutely stand out, and the show stands out as well. So I just wanted to make sure I got that in. So if you're coming to New York, I can't imagine, like, if they take it, you know, do a tour of it. I don't think they're going to do a tour of it and have the stars that you have. So while it's on Broadway, it's in three acts, two intermissions, thank goodness. you know, go out there, go see it. So I normally I wasn't going to do any music. I have to do a piece of music, just because. In a few weeks, I'll be seeing Janis Ian. So here we, let's do this one here.
High school girls with clear skin smile. lacking in the social graces, desperately remained at home, inventing lovers on the phone, who called to say, come dance with me, and murmured vague obscenities. It isn't all it seems, it's 17.
Have a great day, great evening, and wonderful holiday. I'm sorry, I can't help but think about anybody like a combination of Passover with Easter, and thinking about will somebody be putting out a ham bone instead of a lamb bone? But anyway, so until next time.